This is Bird Note. If you're not deep in the world of board games, you might be surprised to learn that one, there's fierce competition for the prestigious Board Game of the Year award, and two, this year's winner is Wingspan, a game about birds. Everything in Wingspan revolves around a deck of 170 beautifully illustrated bird cards. The goal is to attract birds to your aviary by collecting things that they like to eat. Your birds are worth points, and they get you more points when they lay eggs, gather food, or do other bird things. Elizabeth Hargrave, the designer of Wingspan, wanted it to be fun and scientifically accurate. Each card is packed with information about a given bird, including aspects of its behavior.
Brown-headed cowbirds are nest parasites. They lay their eggs in other birds' nests, and I really wanted to somehow make that come true in the game.
So if you have a brown-headed cowbird, whenever another player's bird lays eggs, your brown-headed cowbird also gets to lay an egg. The blue jay gets you points by stashing away food for the winter. Endangered species like the California condor let you draw special bonus cards. As you study your bird's powers and strategize your next move, you're getting a stealth ecology lesson. You can hear the full story about Wingspan on our podcast, Bird Note Presents, or on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill. For more great stories, check out the podcast Today Explained from the Vox Media Podcast Network, a daily news show that helps you actually understand the news. Subscribe to it for free in your favorite podcast app.
Listening to CJSF's special programming for 2019's 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. Wasted. This year's theme is Orange the World. Generation Equality Stands Against Rape. In recent years, the voices of survivors and activists through campaigns such as Me Too and others have put the spotlight on the issue of sexual violence and have reached a crescendo that cannot be silenced or ignored anymore. Stay tuned to find out more about the pervasive rape culture that surrounds us and how to dismantle it and to create a better world for everyone.
Good morning and welcome to special programming on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. We stream online at cjsf.ca or on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all those places. And before we get the show started, I just want to acknowledge that we are broadcasting from the unceded ancestral territory of the Musqueam, Coquitlam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and other indigenous peoples. I am Jesse, and I'm joined in the studio
with Desri.
Hello, Desri. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
Of course.
And today, as part of CJSF's ongoing special programming for the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, you have brought a story to share and discuss that most of our listeners will probably not be familiar with. Do you want to sort of elaborate a bit?
So basically today we're going to talk about the Busola-Dakolo rape controversy in Nigeria. It was something that happened about 6 months ago, and it raised like lots of issues. So, you know, I'm going to tell you guys about the story, and then we're going to have some deep discussion questions, and we're just going to analyze everything. And yeah, but before we go into that, let's listen to a song. And it is called Shine Your Light by Asha.
What's on your mind, child? Tell me all your troubles. What's on your mind, child? I'll help you if you're worried. Share with me your secret problems. Maybe I can help you solve them. Time, child, is all you need. And if you wait a while, child, you'll find it silky. I only know of one solution. You and only you can do it. Shine your light. Don't let nobody tell you you can shine your light. Go out into the world and do just what you like. What's on your mind now? You see you're not so different, so don't bail out. No excuses, no defense. Say it like you really mean it. Everything you say, believe it. Oh yeah. After the dawn comes the light, and you know nobody can tell you no more.
Here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM, part of our special programming for the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, going on for the next 5 days until International Human Rights Day on Tuesday. Joined in the studio by Desiree. Hello again.
Hi.
We just heard a track by Asha.
Yeah.
Called Shine Your Light. Asha is a Nigerian artist.
Yeah, she is.
Is she one of your favorites or just?
Yeah, she's one of my favorites. I know, like, she has 3 albums now, and then, like, I can sing almost any song from her albums. I really love her a lot.
Yeah, that was my my first time hearing her work, and yeah. It's great, catchy, good songs. I'm gonna have to dig in a little deeper.
Yeah,
maybe you can give me the lowdown afterwards, and we can figure out the best place for me to start.
Sure.
But we're here today to talk about something else from Nigeria.
Yeah,
why don't you take us into it?
So it's like this rape controversy that happened a while ago, and it's basically just centered on the fact that some lady called Busola Dakolo, which is a photographer and a wife of a renowned Nigerian soul musician called Timi Dakolo. So she filed a lawsuit against a popular pastor in Nigeria called Pastor Biodun Fatoyinbo, and he's like the pastor of Commonwealth of Zion Assembly Church in Nigeria, which is like a really big church, like a mega church kind of thing. And, you know, so she filed a lawsuit against him saying that he raped her like 20 years ago, twice actually. That he raped her, the first time he raped her was at her family home. And she said, you know, because all of this info, she gave it like over an interview with Y9 Gel, like June, and
And YNiger is a Nigerian news outlet?
Yeah, like some media kind of, yeah. So, and then she said that the first time that she was raped by the pastor, that he came over to the house, and it was fairly early in the morning. Her parents apparently weren't in the country, and it was just her sisters. And he just came, and he just forcefully raped her. And he then said that she should be glad that it was, like, a man of God that, like, took her virginity. And she was just so scarred. And then the second time that he raped her, so his wife just had a baby, and he kind of, or she, or I don't even know, but one of them, like, told her to come over to their house to come and do some cleaning, help out, and which was very odd because, first of all, it was her sisters that would usually go over to their house to go do, like, chores like that, but she was, like, okay, and she went. And, you know, she said that there was even a time, because she kind of, like, spent the whole day and even up until the night, and the pastor suggested that she should go stay in some guest room, and she just saw, like, all the signs, and she was like, she's not going to any guest room, and she insisted. But eventually, like, even his wife was like, if she doesn't want to stay in a guest room, it's fine. But then, like, he cornered her and, like, told her, like, why would you say that? Like, what are you trying to pull off? But it all, like, slid away that night. And so when she was meant to go home the next day, he offered to drop her, you know, at home. And that was when it happened again the second time at the back of his car. And, you know, she said, like, in the interview, I'm basically, like, just giving you the whole rundown of the interview. And she was like, you know, it really affected how she would go to church. And she just couldn't understand what she did wrong. You know, like, she was just being on her own. She doesn't even, I mean, she just sees him, like, respect him as, like, a pastor and, like, nothing else and all of that. So when the issue came out, like, when the interview went viral, it's still on YouTube, still has so many views. You know, it was, like, mixed reactions on social media. Like, why did you take that long? Why 20 years? 20 full years? Because this happened when she was 16, like, fresh out of high school. 20 years, and, like, that's when she came out. And, you know, some people were like, you know, no, he has, like, members that go to his church, and they're like, no, our pastor would never do that, and everything. Like, and there were, like, lots of celebrities that actually, like, came forward and said, like, I stand with you. It was even, like, some hashtag on Instagram, like, hashtag I stand with Busola, and it was just, like, everywhere. And so recently, okay, it's not so recent anymore, but, like, November 15th, the court, because he took him to court, and so the court ruled in the favor of the pastor and said that, I'm going to quote the judge. So he was like, the case was sentimental and it was not aimed at justice but at cruelty, that it is an abuse of the judicial process and a complete waste of time. So he felt like, you're coming, like, you don't have a case. This was 20 years ago. Why would you come out now? Plus, I'd have to say that he's a man of power, so I would not be surprised if, you know, there were some background, you know, things that went down that people didn't get to see. And to top it all up, you know, the judge also said that she would pay a fine of 1 million naira, and that is equivalent to, like, $215 million in Canadian, like, currency. I mean, Nigerian's currency and Canadian's currency, like, Nigerian doesn't really, naira doesn't really have that much value compared to Canadian, but that's still a lot of money.
Yeah, like 250,000.
Yeah.
Canadian dollars?
Million. Because, like, one Canadian dollar is, like, 250 naira. That's a lot.
Right.
So, yeah. But, like, even just looking at it from just, like, the whole, like, naira point of view, it's still, like, a lot of money. And, like, so that also created, you know, stirred up some sort of reactions and everything on social media. And there was, like, this on-air personality that was like, that he agrees with the judge that she just came out and just started calling out the guy without having, like, concrete evidence, and saying, like, he was just like, oh, he has some sons, like, he has three sons, and he knows that, like, he can't even imagine his sons being accused of something they did not do. And, you know, he was just going on. And then another on-air personality was like some sort of another war. But, you know, they were just like coming at each other on Instagram. And the other guy was like, well, I have two daughters. If we're bringing in children here, I have two daughters. And I would not imagine someone just taking advantage of like my daughter's innocence and everything like that. But, you know, that was just people commenting. And, you know, Busola actually said on Instagram, like, she was kind of surprised with the verdict, but at the same time, she wasn't too surprised because she just knew, like, I mean, things might not go in my way, but she was like, she knows, like, the victory came from the fact that she was able to come up and speak out and also bring other people, you know, out, because some people, like, found, you know, from her courage, other people too were like, you know, I'm going to speak up about mine. And there were actually some people that also mentioned, like, they had, like, the pastor had also, like, tried some funny thing with them. And, you know, it was just, you were just like, I'm just glad that even though it was late, yeah, 20 years after, but I'm glad that I came out. And she will pay the fine, but, you know, whatever. But, yeah, so that's basically, like, the whole story.
Well, the fine is one, I mean, the sexual assault is the most, and the abuse of power is by far like the worst parts of this. But the fine to the accuser is chilling, because it you mentioned that coming forward and speaking on this issue had empowered other women and other victims to want to come out.
Yeah.
If now there is this sort of looming threat of being slapped with a fine for excuse me, for coming forward, that's troublesome for sure.
Yeah. There was some other girl too that came out 2013. Her name is Essay, and she came out and she was like, she said she wasn't exactly raped by him, but they were in some penthouse in like an exclusive location, and he also like tried to get at her. She claimed that it was not rape, but she said like there was some sort of like sexual relationship that happened. But when she came out, people were like talking at her, like, what are you saying? Like, I feel like the fact that Busola was like a popular musician's wife and she had her own career kind of like, I don't know, it helped her story, because some other girl came out as well, and people were like, oh wow, so if this actually, so that means like Essay's story, like she just wasn't talking, that means it might have actually happened and everything like that. And you know, it was just, I was just like, wow, I don't even know how to, I don't know how he can, because I'm sure it has caused like lots of damage to like his image. I mean, he still has people going to his church, but this kind of issue would take a long time for, you know, for it to just like wipe off people's minds like completely. But
well, yeah. It's interesting because obviously there are some parallels to the Me Too movement that is you know, started in Hollywood but has sort of swept across parts of the world anyway. But the result is very different. Right. There is the starting of a conversation, but in this case, in the Busola Dakolo case, the result is that the system of power that exists protects the accused and not the accuser. And I mean, that's still very much the case a lot of the time here and in North America, but there, I'm sure, are a myriad of reasons why it's perhaps stronger in Nigeria.
Yeah, it's something that has been, it's, I don't know, from like when I've been born, I just know like this corruption and like abuse of, I don't know, power. And because I knew that for the judge to actually say, like, the words of the judge is like, don't you even have a conscience, though? Don't you even have a conscience for you to just dismiss it, like, fully? You know, it's crazy. But, yeah, I mean, it has, okay, I didn't mention this earlier, but the judge also claimed that her file, you know, she actually filed a lawsuit a day before she went on the interview. And they claim that the file went missing. Yeah.
Strange.
Very strange. Very strange. I even forgot to mention. Very strange. So because he kind of like included that, like, oh, even when missing, she said she filed a lawsuit, period. And I don't know, you know, he really does show that he has like some hands of, you know, but yeah, it was something that really hit me so hard. But yeah, and then some other people were like going on social media saying that, you know, that, okay, fine, maybe he got away this time, but the truth is, like, if this is something that he usually does, then very soon he's gonna come out again. Like, he might do it to someone again, and I mean, the truth will always like show up. That's what, and I feel like that's a very like good way. I mean, you're not trying to like come at him or say something, but you're just like, you know what, if this is really true, you're gonna do it to someone again, and we're gonna know, and something, you know, the truth will just always surface and just come out.
Or yeah. Someone else who is has already been made a victim will come forward or what have you.
Yeah.
We will continue this discussion, but let's take a quick song break.
Yeah.
What do we have next?
Oh, Rise by Katy Perry.
Why'd you pick this song?
Why'd I pick? I just really love the video, first of all. I know you guys have not seen it, but I really love the video, and I like the fact that like the lyrics are like centered on you coming out, like nothing can really pull you down despite anything you might face. So yeah, so this is Rise by Katy Perry.
I won't just survive. Oh, you will see me thrive. Can write my story. I'm beyond the archetype. I won't just conform. No matter how you shake my core, 'cause my roots, they run deep. Oh, oh yes, a little faith.
Fires at night.
Rise by Katy Perry here on Speak Up as part of our special programming for the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Jesse and Desiree here in the studio together discussing a number of things, including a controversial rape case in Nigeria. Dating back a long time, but coming to the forefront of the public spotlight there recently. Oops, sorry, my microphone moving all around, making some noise there. Now we're going to sort of transition to a discussion part. But you have some things to share with us first.
Yeah, so I was doing like some research and I found some pretty interesting stats about sexual abuse and rape in North America. So did you know that 1 in 4 North American women will be sexually assaulted during your lifetime? 80% of sexual assault incidents occur in the home, just like Basala's case. 17% of girls under 16 have experienced some form of incest. Yikes. 15% of sexual assault victims are boys under 16. And most interestingly, only 2-4% of all sexual assault reported are false reports. Because people just go about saying it's false, but just only 2-4% is actually false. And like the rest of it, it's like mostly true. Yeah, so I just felt to share that. So now we're gonna like delve into some thought-provoking questions. Okay, so the first one I have here is, can sexual abuse be outdated? You know, especially when both parties are alive. What do you think, Jesse?
Absolutely not. I don't think so. I think it's never too late to come forward about abuse or, any form of assault, but especially sexual, that of a sexual nature. Yeah. I think that there are a lot of barriers to reporting and barriers to coming forward and just a lot of sort of structural, cultural cultural barriers, and they vary in different communities, but it's still very much the theme of this year's 16 days of activism is around dismantling rape culture. And the statistic that you mentioned that 1 in 4 North American women will be the victim of a sexual assault shows that they're very, very much is a prevalent rape culture.
Yeah, I agree with you. And for me, of course, I totally like agree with you. I feel like it can never be outdated. And even when the two parties are alive, I just feel like it can never be outdated. But the thing is, like, for the victims, if they really have the motivation to take the assailant to court, then it's mostly advisable that you try to come out. I mean, it's not easy. You know, it's easier said than done. But it's always, like, advice that you come out much earlier, because the more time that it takes, it's, like, it weakens your case, just like what happened to Basola. And most people were, like, you know, like, we agree with you, like, we'll stand for you. But if you kind of, like, if you came out more or you filed a lawsuit, like, much earlier, you know, maybe, because there's really like not some sort of concrete evidence. It's just like the word of mouth, and you know, so it's not like they have some sort of like concrete evidence that they can like that can really corroborate your story or something like that. So you know, when it comes to pursuing like some legal action, the earlier like you come out about it and everything, like, there are higher chances that it will rule in your favor and you might get justice. But, you know, like, the longer it takes. But generally, I don't think it can be outdated.
Yeah, I think if you're talking about the legal possibilities, then certainly the legal system has a bias against older crimes of any nature. It's harder to prove. But especially because these crimes are most often committed in private, and there's not generally a lot of witnesses or the further away you get from the date of the crime, the less likely there is to be physical any sort of physical evidence.
Yeah.
Assuredly, there is. It is never too late to come forward and bring the wrongful act of another to light.
Okay. Another question is, what evidence is needed to truly establish rape or sexual abuse of any kind? So I really thought about this question, like, what evidence? I mean, apart from, like, you coming out and saying it, like, what other evidence? And so I did some research, and it says that under Section 274 of the Canada Evidence Act, it states that corroboration is not required. It is not necessarily essential to have, like, additional evidence to support the testimony, especially, like, of a child victim. And the evidence of the victim or witness may be sufficient to secure a conviction. And this section acknowledges that child sexual abuse usually takes place in private, like you said, without any witnesses, and there's usually, like, little physical evidence. It allows for conviction without, you know, evidence. However, as in all criminal cases, guilt must be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. So this does not imply that the court just, like, as long as you say, okay, this happened, the court, like, fully supports you or, like, just takes it like that. But it means that the court may convict in this alone if it is satisfied beyond, like, reasonable doubt that, you know, especially because what I really found was, like, based on, like, child abuse or something like that. But I think it still generally applies. It doesn't have to be narrowed down to just, like, children being assaulted or, you know, violated. But so I watched this web series on YouTube. It's called MTV Sugar. There's, like, the Nigerian, there's South African, but, like, I follow the Nigerian one a lot. And so I just felt to share this. So there's, like, a character. So she went with her friends to, like, some party, and eventually she got raped, and, you know, it was so traumatizing for her, and it was so sad. So she decided, like, along with her mom, that they would seek justice. And it was great that, like, she saw, she knows, like, the faces of the guys that, you know, like, raped her and everything. And so she went to the police station, and she reported it. And it was, you know, they were like, oh, your case is weak. Like, some guy just came and said, your case is weak. Like, just forget about it. Like, there's nothing that can be done. And there was, like, a really nice police officer, a lady that said, I believe you, but we also, like, would love if we can get some eyewitness testimony and some forensic medical evidence. And, you know, this was, I think, at the time she came to the police station, it was, like, 2 months or 3 months. Forensic medical evidence, you know, eyewitness testimony. I'm pretty sure, like, they did not rape her out in the open for people to see or get out their cameras or try to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, you know, I mean, I don't know if she was speaking for how it's done in Nigeria, or maybe it was just, like, based on the script or something from the movie. But I just personally felt like having those two things would be super hard. You know, and that's, like, just a lot to tell the little girl. Like, where will I get people that saw it and the forensic medical, you know, everything like that? But,
well, it definitely shows, like, the weakness of a system that is dependent on, like, proving beyond a reasonable doubt with in situations where it often comes down to two parties' testimony.
Yeah.
Right? And, I mean, regardless of the accused's guilt, they are, like, their best option most of the time, legally, is to not admit guilt. Right?
Yeah.
So they're not incentivized to tell the truth in that case. And then so it becomes, you know, there are a lot of different ways to build a case, but as you're saying, there is sort of a bias towards physical evidence and, like, eyewitness testimony. And for these kinds of crimes and offenses, it's very rare that those exist.
Yeah. I mean, if it existed, that would be a plus. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be really good. It would help your case. But most of the time, there's really none of all that. So it's pretty hard. Yeah, I agree. Okay. Do you think that there's a right time for victims to speak up? And what exactly would you say hinders them from, you know, from coming out, from speaking up, you know? Yeah, so what do you think, Jesse?
I think any time is the right time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as we've sort of discussed, there are... If the desire is to go through the legal system, yeah. Unfortunately, the system is very much set up that the sooner yeah. You can come forward, the better. But that is, there are lots of barriers to doing that, starting with fear of being believed or disbelieved, mm-hmm. Just the inherent trauma caused by the crime that is to be reported, yeah. And the ramifications that can have. Mm-hmm. I think there's also just, I mean, the topic we've been discussing, which is, you know, kind of culturally widespread knowledge that yeah. the system is not always effective, and mm-hmm. that in order to really have an effective result in the criminal legal system, even if the victim comes forward immediately, yeah. They're going to have to probably testify in front of a room full of people, and that can be that can dissuade survivors from stepping forward as well. Yeah. There's a lot more, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, in the process of just trying to come up with what we're going to talk about today, I watched a YouTube video, and it was like, 10 things that Busola knew before she was coming out. You know, she knew that this man was a man of power, you know, influence. She knew that it might some way affect her children. I mean, in the present, because, like, I don't know, seeing their mom on TV, and it's not like she has kids that are, like, 2-3-year-olds. I think the last child that she has is, like, 7. And, I mean, she can always just maybe ask her brother, because I think the first child is, like, 12 or 13. And she can, I mean, the children could just, like, get a whiff of, like, what's happening. And, like, even them growing up, to kind of hear or like see and understand it, you know, you might have like some effects on the children as well. Mm-hmm. So I completely understand what you're saying, like, and so there was actually like I think 2 more people that came out and talked to the like that did an interview too with the same guy that Bukola had Busola had an interview with, but their faces were kind of blurred because they didn't know when to come out. They knew they were gonna be up against like something huge, and they were just not ready for it. So I completely agree. And you know, from the stories I have heard growing up about like all the sexual abuse victims and everything, I would say that sometimes they actually tell their parents that this uncle or this person is like touching me where they're not meant to be touching me, and their parents just laugh about it, or they say like, what are you saying? And you know, that kind of just seemed like, I mean, when they then tell them, they're like completely discouraged, like, I don't think I want to tell anybody. No one's even going to believe me, mm-hmm. or something like that. And another thing could be that parents like might not really educate their children like enough to know that when this happens, this is not proper. This is not proper. Because I remember there was a time that someone came to speak in my high school, and she was like, she also went through like rape and sexual abuse and everything. And she said that she kind of got the hint that it wasn't right, but at some point like she just started enjoying it, and she just felt like, I mean, maybe like seize the moment or something like that. And she said obviously like it was such a wrong mentality, but like she didn't know better. And that really spoke to me that, you know, we also have a role to play in like letting our kids know the impact of these things, and like being aware, being alert.
Well, and really yeah. setting the understanding and expectations for
yeah.
what is acceptable and completely unacceptable
exactly.
behavior, right?
Exactly.
And respect for women and for humans and for people.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that sort of runs through a lot of the examples that you've been pulling up is that, I mean, sexual assault is also very much much more about power than it is about than it is about the sexual end of it. And it's very, you know, because the accuser often, or the accused, often has power over the accuser in some way. It's also very difficult to sort of step forward against that, knowing the consequences that you might face. I mean, you're already seeing it, like you said, with accusers showing up with blurred faces.
Exactly. No, that leads me to another thing I wanted to mention about how sometimes, like, the assailant might be like, if you tell anyone, you're gonna die or something like that, and they just get really scared and they don't want to, you know, just go into something that might result in your death. And yeah, and sometimes, like, the guilt and the pain that they live with just kind of makes them, I don't know, and then they kind of take it out on themselves, and you just feel like, I don't know, this is maybe, like, this is my fate, or this is something I have to take on with me for my whole life. And yeah, it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's important in order to sort of address and remedy that to believe survivors and to work towards a community and a way of life that is categorically firm on these issues, that sexual assault is absolutely not allowable, and that there are consequences.
Exactly.
This is part of CJSF's special programming for the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse.
I'm Desiree.
And we are going to continue this discussion after another short musical break. This is from Studio 6's, CJSF's Studio 6 Live series. From our session with Hope and Mama Rude Gal, a couple of hip-hop R&B artists from the Vancouver area. This track is, well, I guess Mama Rude Gal's from Calgary, but moved out here. Anyway, this track is called Freedom. You can check out the whole Studio 6 session on CJSF's YouTube page or our website, cjsf.ca. We'll be right back.
So what a lovely thing when I hear lasting love and loving last, lasting like eternal past. She screams out, born under the red moon, she seeketh strength without limits, tangible, intangible, unmanageable, free it.
Freedom by Mama Rugal from her Studio 6 Live session with Hope that you can find on CJSF's YouTube page. This is Speak Up, and we are doing a special show as part of our programming for the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. You can find some more information about that on our website, cjsf.ca, as well as archives of the special programming so far and all past, well, most past Speak Up shows, a bunch of stuff. I'm Jesse.
Desiree.
And we have been discussing, well, a number of things. Violence, well, sexual violence, and in particular as it pertains to a case in your home country.
Yeah, Nigeria.
Where are we now?
We are just basically discussing on some questions and just... you know, just kind of thinking through, you know, a lot of implications from sexual abuse and, you know, sexual violence. So the next question that I have in mind is, does speaking up about rape or any form of sexual victimization actually help the victims heal from the trauma? What do you think?
I mean, I don't feel qualified to answer necessarily, because I can't speak from experience.
Yeah.
I think it might help some people, and that's sort of a decision that you have to make on your own or with the support of people you trust.
I agree. I feel like, I mean, I'm also not in the place to judge or speak, but I feel like it is part of the processes that will kind of help you, because I know like lots of victims, part of what causes the trauma or what makes them feel the way they do is because they have kept it in for so long and they have just bottled it up and it just like eats them up. And the fact that when they come out, it kind of makes them feel like, oh, like a burden has been lifted off their shoulders. So I won't say that it would necessarily like guarantee a complete healing. Like after you speak up, you're gonna feel great, you're gonna feel awesome, like nothing happened some years back, or you know, you never had that experience. But I feel like, you know, it's just something that the sexual abuse victims should just do, because it would ultimately help them. But if no, but I just can't say, oh, once you speak up it's all gonna be good. But I feel like it's something that would help them heal. Yeah, so I feel like it is part of the healing process.
Yeah, well, and I think there's also, I mean, obviously some people are able to and some people are not, and some people are working towards it and some people just don't want to at all. But speaking up about sexual victimization does change, does have the potential to change the cultural conversation around it, and to you know, potentially lead to consequences for abusers. So there are other positives, and I mean not just for victims themselves, but for other people, for friends, family, to speak up about it, and if they know about it, to bring it to light can only really be a good thing in my eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, what is the appropriate punishment punishment for sexual abusers and, you know, like rapists, and to ensure justice and, yeah, to basically just ensure justice for the part of the victims and all that. So is there like some appropriate...
I mean, that's a very, very tough question.
Yeah.
I believe much more in the idea of restorative justice or rehabilitative justice than strictly punitive justice.
Yeah.
Obviously, and again, not speaking from a place of experience, it's hard to I'm not a legal expert, and yeah. I don't know what the specific punishments, so to speak, yeah. should be. But I do think that we should be working towards a system that ensures that offenders don't become reoffenders.
Yeah.
And there is lots of research out there about different methods that mm-hmm. are more likely to produce, you know, to rehabilitate or to have relapses.
Yeah. So I know that, like, each country has its own, like, legal structures and their own system of, like, administrating justice and all that. So I looked, you know, up some laws and legal stuff. And in Canada, anyone who commits a sexual assault is guilty of an indictable offense and is liable to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 10 years, or an offense punishable on summary conviction and liable to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 18 months. So I think, you know, that is what Canada has to say. But I'm sure, like, there are other, you know,
there are other
laws.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that's, it's up to 10 years.
Yeah.
But then there's also for different, like, an offense punishable on summary conviction is yeah. considered less serious than yeah. a indictable offense. Mm-hmm. So that's why the numbers are different.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
then there are also other offenses that can be added on to that, or yeah. etc.
Yeah, there's so many. In Nigeria, if the offender is less than 14 years old, a child, basically, the punishment is a maximum term of 15 years imprisonment. And then in other cases, a minimum of 12 years imprisonment is provided by the act and for the gang rape. The offenders are liable jointly to a minimum term of 20 years without an option of fine.
Well, that's interesting that
yeah.
the punishment itself
yeah.
In Nigeria is
yeah.
like stricter, like mm. a 12-year minimum as opposed
yeah.
to a 10-year maximum.
Yeah.
But then also it seems like I wonder what that plays in the justice system's
yeah.
reluctance to convict, knowing that it's at least 12 years.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. And our final, you know, piece for today or question for discussion is... So what are, like, the resources that have been put in place to support sexual victims, except especially here in Vancouver? So I'm going to hand over to Jesse to basically just talk about that and inform us, you know, on the resources here around us that could help, you know, sexual assault victims come out and speak up.
Well, there are a lot in the Lower Mainland, in the area around. Up here at SFU, there is a Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. You can find out more about their work at sfu.ca/sexual-violence.html, or you can just Google SFU Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. They're up here on the Burnaby campus, and they do support work and advocacy and a whole bunch of stuff. You can find out their education plan, whole bunch of stuff there. In Vancouver and sort of the communities around us, you can check out Women Against Violence Against Women, the Rape Crisis Center. That's WAVAW.ca. And they have a 24-hour crisis and information line, which is 604-255-6344. That's 604-255-6344. Or you can call toll-free 1-877-892-7583. And there's also the Battered Women Support Society in Vancouver itself. That's at bwss.org, bwss.org. Or 604-687-1867, 604-687-1867. Put all those links in the show page for this show, which you can find at cjsf.ca under the Speak Up area, and also under our 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence special programming page. I am Jesse.
And I am Desiree.
And we have been with you this last hour. We have... do you want to do the song or the spoken word piece to end?
I would say the spoken word piece.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about this 3-minute spoken word piece?
So there were like lots of spoken word pieces about sexual assault on YouTube, but this one I could feel I could feel like the pain and the hurt that this guy was kind of feeling, and how he was just trying to say that no matter the experience that you've had, no matter how long it's been, you can always rise above it. It doesn't mean, you know, because it's tied with flowers, and he's just saying like we're flowers, even though we could easily like be squashed or anything like that, we still blossom and we can still come out of any terrible situations that have held us down, you know. And I guess that really stood out for me, and yeah.
Great. Well, thanks, Desiree, for putting this hour together. And this is Flowers, or A Beginner's Guide to Surviving Sexual Assault by Daniel from Button Poetry.
One, on the days where you feel more victim than survivor, remember that this was not your fault. There is no blueprint for dealing with trauma, so know that whatever you are feeling is valid. With that said, two, you will be re-victimized. You won't deserve it. You'll never ask for it. There'll never be a reason for it, but it will happen. And yes, I use these phrases for a reason, because sometimes what they say will take you back to that place again, that place of pain and shame and whatever synonym for murder that you can come up with. They will fight for the rights to your trauma as if you need protecting from the body they're trying to take from you, which is to say they will tell you it's not your fault in one breath, then turn and ask why you didn't report in the next. Remember, they did not dig this grave for you. They are only dressing it with flowers. Three, it says on pill bottles as a disclaimer, do not operate heavy machinery. The irony in all of this is that trauma is heavy fucking machinery, which is to say I'm not giving you permission, but if you ever decided it was too much and you wanted to rip yourself from the soil of this world, I would understand. For some nights, it will feel like their hands are reaching for you in the darkness, and some nights, it still feels like their hands are reaching for me in the darkness. But when you wake up gasping for air, take it as a reminder, because even though it still feels like they are still here, so are you. You, survivor, are still here, so outgrow every storm. The universe rains on you, the sleepless nights, the flashbacks, the triggers, the guilt, the shame, the mouths of every person that said your name was victim. Five, you are not a victim. It doesn't feel like you've survived anything, but I promise you. Six, we are flowers, beautiful and fragile as we may be sometimes. This is our garden, so let's fertilize it with all the bullshit they told us. And when they try to take your body, you remind them who's living in it. When they try to take your voice, you tell them, I am a survivor. Because on the days where you feel more victim than survivor, more desert than rainforest, more wasteland than giving tree, you will feel broken. Seven, it is okay to feel broken. Broken is where the healing begins. This is where we begin. This is where we begin again and again and again. So shake off these growing pains. Stretch your arms towards the sun and do the one thing all flowers were meant to do. Bloom.
Tune into CGSF from November 25th to December 10th for special programming for the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. This year's theme is Orange the World, Generation Equality Stands Against Rape. In recent years, the voices of survivors and activists through campaigns such as #MeToo and others have put